Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, thank you for joining us for Catholic News, read by Chris Michalik. This is a curated show which includes articles from the Denver Catholic and the National Catholic Register. You're invited. Annunciation Heights' biggest party of the summer, Fiat Fest 2025. Get ready for an unforgettable day of adventure, community, and celebration at Fiat Fest 2025. It's the summer's biggest event at Annunciation Heights, the Archdiocese Camp. The day begins with an adventure race around the camp property, which is accessible to everyone, whether they are collegiate runners or families that are pushing double strollers. After the race, there's plenty of time for community and connection over great food and live music. At its foundation, Fiat Fest is a celebration of the Altum Institute, Annunciation Heights missionary program. The missionaries play a crucial role at camp, running youth camps, facilitating family-centric programming, serving guest groups, and leading instructions and curriculum development for JP2 Outdoors Lab, a school-focused education program at Annunciation Heights. Most importantly, they live a life of frequent, daily, and constant prayer. Whether you're racing through the woods, enjoying a home-cooked barbecue, or dancing to live bluegrass under the stars, there's something for everyone at this one-of-a-kind mountain gathering. What's included with your registration? An accessible adventure race with epic obstacles across camp. A hearty cookout with all the sides and fixins. Live bluegrass from Colorado favorites, Chain Station. Games, treats, and fun for all ages. And best of all, your support helps the young missionaries who serve at camp. Don't miss the chance to celebrate summer in the Rockies with great food, great music, and even greater people. For more information and to register for Fiat, visit our website, www.annunciationheights.org/FiatFest. Central San Juan Diego officially joins Catholic Charities, a joyful union that strengthens services to the Hispanic community. Catholic Charities is honored to announce that Central San Juan Diego, a long-standing and vibrant ministry of the Archdiocese of Denver, has officially become part of Catholic Charities, making a significant and joyful step forward in our shared mission of service. Founded in 2003 through the visionary leadership of then Archbishop Charles Chaput and then Auxiliary Bishop Jose Gomez, now Archbishop of Los Angeles, Central San Juan Diego was established to serve and empower Colorado's rapidly growing Hispanic and Latino Catholic community. Their vision was strongly supported and expanded by Archbishop Samuel J. Aquila and Auxiliary Bishop Jorge Rodriguez, who have continued to champion Central's impact and growth. Central has always been about empowering individuals and families through faith and education, said Denver Archbishop Samuel J. Aquila. This integration strengthens the Church's witness and service to our Hispanic and Latino brothers and sisters. Over the past two decades, Central has provided culturally rooted services in faith formation, leadership development, and adult education, become a trusted and beloved institution for thousands of families. And in 2018, the pastoral team from Central integrated with the Archdiocesan Office of Evangelization and Family Life. That move helped align evangelization efforts between the Anglo and Latino communities. Now, by joining Catholic Charities, Central's work will continue and expand under a broader organizational umbrella, allowing for streamlined services, deeper community reach, and stronger support for those in need. Programs such as immigration assistance, ESL classes, GED preparation, digital literacy, and family support will now be part of the Catholic Charities portfolio, helping reduce duplication and eliminate confusion for individuals seeking help. Central San Juan Diego will continue operations at its historic location at 2830 Lawrence Street in Denver's River North or Rhino neighborhood. It will maintain its hallmark atmosphere of welcome and dignity, staffed by a team of dedicated employees, volunteers, and part-time instructors, many of whom are former students who now give back to their community. 5 dedicated staff members and 6 part-time teachers from Central have officially joined the Catholic Charities family, including Maru Gutierrez, Program Manager, Daniel Palomino, Family Support Specialist, Citlali Lopez, Program Specialist, Tomas Arrios, Program Specialist, and Roberto Lopez, Program Specialist. These individuals bring deep cultural insights, strong community ties, and years of service-based experience. Central's Executive Director Alfonso Lara has joined the Archdiocese Pastoral Center staff as Director of Leader Formation in the Office of Evangelization and Family Life. Catholic Charities and Central San Juan Diego have collaborated closely for years, particularly in immigration legal services. This formal merger deepens that relationship and reinforces a shared commitment to walking alongside the most vulnerable with compassion, dignity, and excellence. Catholic Charities expresses deep gratitude to all who have supported Central San Juan Diego over the years and looks forward to building upon its incredible legacy. As we move forward together, we remain steadfast in our commitment to holistic, faith-driven service for all. Simple Rules, Guidance for a Weary Soul by Paul Winkler. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Ecclesiastes 1:9. It is assumed that this phrase was written by Solomon, a guy who literally had everything available to him in the world. Yet despite his success and all the goodies that come with it, he expresses a deep sense of fatigue. Solomon was gifted by God with wisdom and discernment. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before, and none like you shall arise after you. God also gave him a bonus gift of earthly things he did not ask for, riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. Despite all those gifts from God, he eventually chose to let concupiscence, specifically lust, rule him. Solomon's point in this passage was not about a technological advancement or human progress, but about the unchanging nature of the human heart. He recognized that while the world around us continues to change, human nature remains consistently broken, and I believe he recognized that he was not immune to it. Ironically, the trajectory of Solomon's life mirrors that of many high-profile media figures and business moguls today, who even with fame, fortune, and seemingly limitless access to pleasure and power, continue to search for fulfillment. We average people also search for ultimate happiness. The world never stops shouting for our time and attention, telling us our happiness can be found through earthly things. My own mind and soul grow weary from the daily battle against the noise of distractions that appeal to my own lower nature. I found a simple way to stay focused and refreshed using the KISS method. KISS is an acronym from the 1960s that stands Keep It Simple, Stupid. The term was coined by Kelly Johnson, a Lockheed Skunk Works employee, who wanted systems designed so that they could be repaired by a mechanic with average skills under combat conditions with minimal complexity. In a high-pressure environment called life, which often feels like a battleground, I realized I needed to design a similar system to Johnson's for my personal, professional, and spiritual life. Just as the Skunk Works team engineered high-performance systems that were simple enough for any mechanic to repair, these simple rules can help us navigate life staying focused while working on our personal development, business mastery, and spiritual maturity. Here are my simple KISS rules. Simple KISS rule number 1, get over yourself. As newborns, we are completely helpless, yet unrelentingly demanding of our parents. Eventually, as we mature, We should switch from a heart occupied with only ourselves to a heart concerned about others. Spiritual maturity opens our hearts, allowing God to dwell there. We need to heed St. John of the Cross, who said, "God does not fit in an occupied heart." Simple Kiss Rule number 2, define happiness. The key to finding lasting happiness is first to define it. Father Robert Spitzer defines happiness as the fulfillment of our desire. This is important because every decision we make in life is based on whether that decision will make us happy. So let me ask you, what do you truly desire? Simple Kiss Rule number 3, work on your barriers to holiness. The Jesuit priest at Walsh Jesuit High School taught me that the hungry stomach, physical pain, and spiritual woundedness are barriers to our sanctity. There are temporal solutions to hunger and physical and psychological ailments, but a wounded soul keeps us defensive and untrusting of others, including God. This woundedness can happen by our own hand or be given to us by others throughout our lives. Father Scott Trainer uses a great metaphor of a minefield, our soul with many wounds. We put up fences to keep ourselves and others away from those wounds, allowing them to fester and making our beautiful soul a wasteland. We need inner healing with the help of a holy bomb squad of Jesus and a spiritual director or counselor to dig out and heal those minds or wounds buried deep in our souls. Solomon was given a discerning mind, but his heart and woundedness, weighed down with God's gift of wealth and honor, ultimately took him down. Simple Kiss Rule number 4, act, apply, change, transfer. Put these simple rules into practice, reflect on their positive impact on us, and look for opportunities to share them with others. As we live out these simple rules and share them through our example, we do more than follow a path. We create one for others. As Pope St. Paul VI wrote in Evangelii Nuntiandi, "Modern man listens more willingly to witnesses than to teachers, and if he does listen to teachers, it is because they are witnesses. Our authentic witness, grounded in action and humility, becomes a powerful form of servant leadership." Federal court blocks Washington law that would force priests to violate Seal of Confession by Daniel Payne of the Catholic News Agency. A federal court on July 18th blocked a controversial Washington state reporting law that would require priests to violate the Seal of Confession, siding with the state's Catholic bishops who brought suit against the measure earlier this year. The law, passed by a state legislature earlier this year and signed by Governor Robert Ferguson, added clergy to the list of mandatory abuse reporters in the state, but it didn't include an exemption for information learned in a confessional, explicitly leaving priests out of a privileged communication exception afforded to other professionals. In the ruling, District Judge David Estudillo said there was no question that the law burdened the free exercise of religion. A situation where priests hear confessions related to child abuse or neglect, the rule places them in a position of either complying with the requirements of their faith or violating the law, the judge wrote. Estudillo noted that the measure, if passed, modifies existing law solely to make members of the clergy mandatory reporters with respect to child abuse or neglect. As written, the law is neither neutral nor generally applicable insofar as it treats religious activity less favorably than comparable with secular activity, he said. The state could have made clergy mandatory reporters while allowing a narrow exception for confession, Estudillo said, as more than 24 other states already have. The order bars the Washington state government from enforcing the law. The ruling comes after bishops sued Ferguson, State Attorney General Nicholas Brown, and more than 36 prosecutors over the controversial reporting law, On July 15th, those prosecutors filed a motion in the court promising not to appeal the injunction against the law or any final judgment of the court in exchange for largely being excused from the ongoing legal proceedings. Ferguson and Brown are still subject to the suit. The lawsuit argued that the law violated the free exercise of religion protected by the First Amendment by infringing on the sacred seal of a confession, as well as both the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and the state constitution. The Washington bishop's effort drew support from a broad variety of advocates, including the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the U.S. Department of Justice, a coalition of Orthodox churches, and Bishop Robert Barron of Winona, Rochester, Minnesota. Bishop Barron earlier this month argued to the court that a penitent who is aware the priest might, let alone must, share with others what was given in the most sacred confidence of confession would be reluctant indeed to ever approach the sacrament. The Department of Justice, meanwhile, said the law appears to single out clergy as not entitled to assert applicable privileges as compared to other reporting professionals, including lawyers, doctors, and social service workers. The law even drew international rebuke when the Confraternity of Catholic Clergy, which represents over 500 Roman Catholic priests and deacons from the U.S., Australia, and the United Kingdom, last month issued a statement criticizing the passage of laws which attempt to compel ordained priests to disclose the identity and content of what a penitent has confessed. The group criticized governments for specifically targeting priests while at the same time respecting and upholding the institutions of attorney-client and doctor-patient's privilege. Though the Washington bishops had mounted an aggressive challenge to the state law, church leaders there assured the faithful that the seal of confession would remain inviolate regardless of any legal stipulations one way or the other. Shepherds, bishops, and priests are committed to keeping the seal of confession, even to the point of going to jail, Spokane Bishop Thomas Daly said in May. Church canon law dictates that a priest who directly violates the seal of confession is automatically excommunicated. Bishop Barron earlier this month told the court that few religious practices are more misunderstood than the sacred seal of confession in the Catholic Church. Catholics believe that penitents who seek the sacrament of confession are speaking to and hearing from the Lord himself via the priest, the prelate wrote. As a result, Bishop Barron said, absolutely nothing ought to stand in the way of a sinner who seeks this font of grace. Adoption, the life-giving option America overlooks. To make adoption a true alternative to abortion, Catholics must confront cultural misconceptions and invest in renewed pastoral outreach, by John Grondelsky. Adoption, not abortion, has been among the staples of pro-life mantras. It was emblazoned on the first pro-life bumper sticker I got from my parents' car right after Roe v. Wade was decided. The problem is, there is no follow-through. Americans have always been ambivalent about abortion. When asked specifically about particular cases or stages of pregnancy, many have visceral opposition to abortion, but when it comes to actually translating those feelings into law, they pull back. The same can be said of adoption. Most Americans will applaud adoption, salute adoptive families, and consider adoption as an alternative to abortion, but again, the problem is no follow-through. Brad Wilcox's Institute of Family Studies in Virginia just published Why Most Americans Admire Adoption But Don't Choose It. Numbers don't lie. In 2022, there were about 2 million abortions, but only 25,000 adoptions in the United States. That's 1.25%. The odds of a woman placing a child for adoption versus procuring an abortion are 50 to 1. Why? Authors Kirk and Hanlon cite three reasons. First, many women imagine that child will live in a bad situation. They think of adoption as being put into some kind of welfare, a perennial foster care system where kids are neglected or abused. They believe that they have no say in their child's placement and will be forever cut off from him. Some even imagine it will cost them money they don't have. None of these things is true. Second, adoption ranks third among pregnancy options. 50 years of choice rhetoric has tarnished the idea of delivery and handing over a child for adoption as giving up, rather than exercising self-defining autonomy. For women not culturally pressured into getting it over with and having an abortion, the usual second choice is raising the baby herself. Sometimes family pressures encourage this, at other times that decision leads to family abandonment. The father is often out of the picture. As the clock for a safe abortion ticks away, time pressures multiply, and arranging an adoption is seen as the most arduous, time-consuming process. Third, an emotional attachment. Many women simply cannot conceive that they can give away a baby they gave birth to. They imagine they cannot cut the emotional bond that delivery produced. It's paradoxical but true. They may feel less connection to a baby suctioned up by a vacuum tube at 12 weeks than a baby she's carried for 40 weeks and delivered. We shouldn't be surprised. Pregnancy, naturally, is supposed to be a bonding experience. The authors suggest women with a crisis pregnancy are often victims of a lot of mis- and disinformation. The great advocate of reproductive health care, Planned Parenthood, would make no money steering babies to adoption. Abortion has always thrived on a myth that somehow the procedure will make everything go away, as it never happened. When that kind of magical thinking accompanies the pressures of doing something, it seems like a quick and easy solution compared to the additional process of that adoption involves. And let's be honest, adoption always leaves open the possibility that maybe even decades later an unknown person will knock at the door and say, "Mom?" Kirk and Hanlon's main recommendation is that states require women seeking abortions under the bioethical criterion of informed consent to receive detailed information about adoption possibilities in that state. That information must be more, they insist, than perfunctory or pro forma lists of adoption agencies. It should involve explanations that adoption is not foster care. Private adoption can involve the birth mother, and that legal and financial help is available. They also advocate inclusion of that information in high school health, physical education, and or family life requirements so that every person graduating in the state has an accurate view of what adoption is and isn't. Let me extend that their list further. Every parish should include such an adoption information handout in the parish bulletin at least annually. The handout should be in any welcome kit for new parish registrants. There should be an annual presentation in the parish about adoption options, both for people wanting to surrender their child and those wanting to adopt. Parish offices and pro-life groups should have the local Catholic adoption agency's telephones on their speed dial. A similar presentation on adoption should occur annually at priest gatherings or presbyteral councils. It would not be a bad thing for each bishop to write a pastoral letter now on the value of adoption. State Catholic conferences also have to get loud about local restrictions that handicap Catholic adoption agencies, like gender-affirming requirements for placements. We must not let politicians drive us out of business at this moment, and must be ready to sue on religious freedom grounds to stop them if they try. That is doubly true in states, Massachusetts, New Jersey, where local political establishment also targets crisis pregnancy centers. Roe v. Wade 3 years ago caught pro-life movement in a reverse whiplash from 1973. In 1973, local control of abortion was lost. In 2022, it all came back, even though much of our local support structure has atrophied because of 50 years of abortion federalization. But with local control, abortion has become not just a political but also a social issue in the local community. Pro-life advocates are now confronted not just by the theoretical legal status of abortion, but the practical needs of mothers in distress here and now. And while adoption seems a solution, the data suggests it's less of a solution than we perhaps imagine. The Kirk Hanlon research confirms what we've been learning for a while. Adoption consistently comes in last among choices for problem pregnancies. Speaking at the 2024 Cardinal O'Connor Conference for Life at Georgetown, Boston Cardinal Sean O'Malley noted the same phenomenon, asserting there are 86 abortions for every adoption. Based on Kirk Hanlon numbers, the Cardinal is generous. If adoption is to be more than a theoretical option, nominally on the table but rarely exercised, we need to invest more in its promotion.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.